This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo.
I've been on this block, born and raised here, been living here from day one, you know. Seen it all on this hood, on this strip right here. Everything on this block right here I seen. You know, I seen how the game will mess you up coming up in your life, you know. Will mess you up because you just be a little out here trying to go to school or whatever, you know, and cops coming in harassing you, you know, mess up your criminal record from your young so that you considered a criminal from day one.
This is what it is, man. This is the playground of the palace right now. You got the little young bucks running around. You're not really financially stable, so it's always on the grind and you're always trying to make something of yourself, you know. So basically it was the normal type of shit what go through, man. They're grinding, they're hustling, they're struggling, they're brawling, fighting, whatever, you know what I mean? We're just everybody's hungry, man. So that's what it was like, man. It's real hungry growing up, you know, everybody really grinding and doing their thing.
Michael Chettleborough is a Canadian expert on street gangs and author of Young Thugs, Inside the Dangerous World of Canadian Street Gangs. He's on the line with us from Toronto. Welcome to People First Radio, Michael.
Pleasure to be here.
We just heard part of the HarperCollins book television preview of your book. Tell us about that book.
Well, I've been doing work in the street gang area for about 15 years, and over, I would say, the first 10 years in me talking about the gang situation, I would rarely find an individual that would take my concerns seriously. I've been calling for a growing gang epidemic, or I won't call it an epidemic, but a gang growing problem back in 1995. And not much happened between 95 and 2005 until a pretty blonde 15-year-old girl named Jane Kriba, an innocent bystander, was shot and killed in downtown Toronto in a so-called Boxing Day murder. And all hell broke loose after that. And if you can remember that period of time, there was a run-up to an election. Stephen Harper was competing against Paul Martin for the hearts and minds of Canadians, and in large part mobilized around this issue of gangs. And what we're dealing with right now is simply the more media attention being paid on this. So after Jane Kriba was shot, my wife came to me and said, it's time to write the book. And within about 2 to 3 weeks, we had offers from 6 or 8 major publishers, and so the book was born out of tragedy, Jane Kriba's murder.
Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, her family's from Nanaimo.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, it affected everybody across Canada. Could you talk about what you know about gangs? What do you see going on out there?
Oh, that's a big question.
It is. I'm sorry.
Like, kind of like asking, what do we know about global warming?
Okay, give me a chunk of it. Give me a little chunk.
Well, what I would say with this is that the issues that we are dealing with now, the discussion that we're having right now, is really a problem that's been 30, 40 years in the making. So this is not a post-2006 problem. So gangs have been around with Canadians for years, and they will continue to be with Canadians a year. What we do know is this, is that across the country, I would estimate approximately 22 to 25,000 street gang members under the age of 28. But that's only part of the problem. When we look at the issue of gang, we're really talking about kids in youth gangs, fight gangs, and sometimes other words are used, through to street gangs, through to the top of the food chain, which is organized crime. So what we know is that it's a growing number. The level of violence is increasing, in large part because of the vibrancy of the drug trade in this country, which we can certainly talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
And to a large extent, what we're seeing is that at the street gang level, there are more collaborative relationships with other gangs, including more sophisticated organized crime folks, which to a great extent, what we're seeing is that street gang members are being mentored in the ways of badness by much more sophisticated organized crime folks that want to insulate themselves from police suppression. So there's a lot of stuff happening in the country. A lot of kids are involved. I've seen drug dealers as young as 8 in some parts of the country through to about 28. But thankfully, no, we're starting to have this dialogue and get our minds around why kids join, what is life like as a gangster, what are we dealing with in terms of the drug trade and other criminal markets. So we're very much in a learning process right now in Canada about this issue.
Mm-hmm. There was a big interview in our Vancouver Sun paper on the weekend, a young man who was involved in the UN gang, and listening to his story, which comes from a background, his mother was addicted and his father, and you know, you can see the perpetual history of people and situations, and then the intense punishment angle that we come at it with is really all related to it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the article, and you know, that's a fairly typical case. You know, one of the things that we need to understand is that street gangsters are not born, they're made, to a very large extent. Although, you know, we know that about 5% or so, and we call them prolific offenders or frequent flyers, these are the 5% of individuals that have mental health disorders, that could have, you know, sociopathic tendencies. Those are the people that might be born that way. But for the most part, there's a confluence of factors acting on a youth over a period of years that give rise to their decision at some point to join a gang. So a lot of us tend to think that, or some of us tend to think that, you know, it must be external influences. I hear some people still talk about, well, if it weren't for violent video games or the hip-hop culture, we wouldn't have a gang problem. That's nonsense. A kid doesn't watch a video and decide the next day, I'm going to be a gangster. So if you are not being socialized properly, if you don't have, for example, a really positive pro-social male role model in your life, you're going to be socialized on the street. If you live in a dangerous community, if your parents are drug addicted or other families are drug addicted, if you have access to guns, if you're surrounded by gangs in your community, for you, the decision can be sometimes very clear. Either I'm going to join a gang and victimize other, or I'm going to be the victim. So poverty, discrimination, all those things, you know, enter into the decision-making process, however flawed it is, of a young person. And that's a common thing. But the thing that I need to note, though, is that it's not just all kids at risk that are joining gangs. We know, for example, in the Lower Mainland area, that there's a cohort of young people. These are middle-class kids. A lot of them come from the South Asian community. I'm not trying to denigrate that community, but it's a unique phenomena out west, is that these are kids. Perhaps there's a cultural issue, challenges with their parents. They're joining gangs, and you look at them, and they have no business being gangsters. They have two-parent families that live in a nice house. They have access to a nice car, but they're joining gangs for the kicks and the thrills, for the power that it confers, for access to the lucrative drug market. Very much, I want it all, and I want it now, and a number of different influences. So it's a very diverse social organism in this country.
Michael, you mentioned the concept that, let's say, violent video games can lead to somebody become or increased levels of violence. Let's take another angle, the notion that gangs are an American or a U.S. problem, not really a Canadian problem. Now, you talked about gangs in the Lower Mainland of B.C., and I'm wondering, are there any other unique Canadian aspects that you discovered in your research and in your writing that relate to gangs in Canada?
No, not. Look, it's there are changes around the world, but street gangs are everywhere in the world. It's you know, wherever you have a place where there's differential in terms of ethnic background, economics, opportunities, etc., you'll have gang formation. So it's really a product of modern day society. Although we know we've had gangs for 500-600 years, so you know, there's not a lot necessarily that's going to differentiate a Canadian street gang from an American one. And as to your point, this is a Canadian homegrown problem. This hasn't been a problem that's been exported to us from the United States. It's not like gangsters in South Central LA are saying, boy, I think I want to set up shop in Nanaimo. I hear great things about it. It doesn't really work that way. But one thing that we do know about gangs is in Canada is that we call them a bit more of a hybrid nature, whereas a lot of the street gangs in the United States are highly territorial. You'll see that in their names. So you go to South Central LA, for example, you'll see the Grape Street Crips. You'll see 18th Street. You will see gangs reflecting a geographical territory, truly protecting their hood, claiming that territory. In Canada, we have much less of that. We have more territorial around control of drug markets. We have more gangsters in and out of different kind of gangs. You know, the notion of blood in, blood out, that once you join a street gang, you're a member for life, doesn't really hold true. We have in Canada, perhaps much more so than the United States, is multi-ethnic composition, whereas the gangs in the United States tend to be aligned along a primary ethnic line, all black, all Asian, all Native American. We have much more of a hybrid nature where, you know, we are truly equal opportunity employers at the street gang level, that if you can produce capacity for the gang, if you can get along, well, then you're welcome to join. So it tends to be less of an ethnic-based issue, although there are still ethnic-based gangs in the country.
How would you see Stephen Harper's new policies and politics affecting the shape of street gangs?
Can I talk frankly?
Yeah, absolutely.
it's the primacy of rhetoric over reason. I'm in a punchy mood only because the last 2 days or the two days last week, where politicians descended upon the Vancouver Lower Mainland area with policy prescriptions in hand and proclamations that were sending a message to the gangsters. And I think it is ridiculous. The things that the public policy arc that we're on right now is not going to produce much in the way of benefit of solving the gang issue. We are truly in this country navigating in the fog without instrumentation insofar as the gang is concerned. I'm not anti-police. Police have an essential role to play in this task. They are generally underfunded. They're under-equipped in terms of human resources. They're playing catch-up to a problem that's been growing for 30 years. They are truly, in some respects, disorganized police versus organized crime. I get that. But we are not going to solve the gang situation only through the pointy end of the criminal justice system, through more cops on the street, longer sentences, because incarceration, death on the street, all those things are conditions of employment for a young gangster. And it's not like last week after these announcements, gangsters from across Vancouver got on a conference call and said, our advisors have done some cost-benefit analysis and we should curtail our way. So I think that announcements last week were a lost opportunity to bring in some measures that could really deal with the situation. And what we lack in this country is very much a balanced approach to the gang issue. As well, we continue to have these sacred cows, these levers of the criminal justice system that nobody wants to pull. And specifically, I refer to this larger debate that we need to have on drug reform, mm-hmm. because you can't understand the business of gangs without looking at the business of drugs. They are too tightly intertwined, and the violence that we see on the street is 90% plus related to the lucrative drug trade and the rivalries that result because of the amount of money that's being made on the streets right now.
That's true. And I mean, the RCMP in British Columbia, 88% of law enforcement officers agree that, you know, all crime is related to the drug industry.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. If you were to survey those same cops and ask them how many of you are in favor of drug reform, well, you probably get the same number saying, no, they don't support it. Ask them privately, and you'll get a much bigger number that says, mm-hmm. yeah, you know what we're doing ain't working. And that's the debate we need to have. We need just to have a calm, collected, rational argument and that asks the question, does drug prohibition work? And if you think that it does, demonstrate that it does. Not mm-hmm. on moralistic purposes, but to actually show me where it works. And wherever we look around the world, there is no evidence that it does work.
So, look at Mexico.
Well, look at Mexico, look at Peru, Bolivia, yeah. look at everywhere. It's yeah. all around us, the seeds of destruction that have been sown by some of the worst public policy ever conceived. Yet we don't want to talk about that. We cannot attempt to look at that lever of the criminal justice system. And that's where we're going to continue to have this conversation 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and it's going to be death and destruction on the street. And I think that it's as a result of the lack of courage of our politicians to actually confront this issue head on.
Mm-hmm. Michael, it's been a very, very interesting, very helpful to speak with you. I'm wondering, we just have a little less than a minute left in our time here. Is there anything you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
Well, no, geez, I need more than men to do
yes.
that. What I think is that, look, we're not gripped in a gang epidemic, so let's take a deep breath. Your chance of random victimization as a result of gangs, if you have nothing to do with the business of drugs or gangs, is very slow. You have a much greater chance of dying in a traffic accident or a swimming pool. So we live in safe cities. We haven't lost the fight, but it's the decisions that we make from a policy standpoint in the next 10 years that are crucial to avoiding what I think could truly become an epidemic. And the stuff that you see in Vancouver now, if we don't act well and act immediately, we're going to see much more of that because of the decisions that we're making top-down in Ottawa. And I think that's really what we need to, as disengaged voters, is to get off of our butts and start talking more about this issue and attacking it. We all have a role to play.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. That was very intelligently and inspirationally put. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure.
Thanks very much, Michael. Michael Chettleberg is an author and Canada's leading expert on street gangs. His firm, Astwood Strategy Corporation, is a criminal justice research, evaluation, and management consultancy.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Open Minds, Open Windows Society, both of Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of these organizations.